Well, I would love to start with chai specifically. This is kind of really nice that you're returning to TIFF after almost a decade with this film. What was that experience like? I know last time was with one of your films about Senegal, but what was that experience returning to TIFF?
It was great, but it makes me feel old. Like, I can't believe it's been 10 years. And I think it was just because my last film had been off-cycle. Like, there's been more of the Sundance cycle. If we're never ready by September. But it was wonderful to return. Canadian audiences are awesome. We love the docs program there. It's so strong, and it was like an honor to be included.
And then as far as, guys, you know, that Sundance cycle compared to TIFF, how much fun is it to do kind of a fall release compared to, you know, a summer where you're kind of waiting the year to see what happens? I know with, like, Meru, you guys had great success because of the amount of time you were able to spend in the theaters, and Free Solo seems to be doing hopefully really well. I mean, the opening seems really great, but I'm curious, does that change the perspective for you guys about, you know, when the films come out and when they're released to the public?
I think it's basically like a general trend right now in documentary that most people agree that the summer is a really good time because there's more space. Like, that's the issue with documentaries. Like, you know, we can't compete against, like, the big awards titles of the fall. Unfortunately, like, it took us a long time to finish the film, so we're being released in the fall. And I think we're very humbled and excited that people see what we see in the film, but it was intimidating to be released in the fall. And I think, you know, who knows, right? But, like, with Meru, we opened early enough, and we could have even opened earlier, probably. And we just kept on saying that there was space until Everest was released. And then that just, like, drove us out of the theater. Because it was too similar, right? So I think it's hard. I think it's hard for any doc coming out in the fall. And it's hard to make it work. It's hard to throw the box office that you could in the summer.
Have you guys been excited, though, about the response to this? And really, I mean, I think people are falling in love with Alex's personality in particular. This must be really bittersweet about how people are really tackling this as one of the best docs of the year.
Well, we are humbled and we're grateful and we're excited, but, like, you know, especially in a film like this where the risks were just so high and so real, you know, we just did our best, right? Like, every member of our team gave it their all and their commitment, and, you know, I know at the end of the day, we did our best. Like, whether or not other people see that is different. So we're just, you know, humbled and grateful that people are coming out to see the movie. And it's amazing that they're falling in love with Alex. But it's hard not to at the same time, right? Like, he pushes you to be a better person no matter what.
So I've got to ask, technology-wise, when you guys are, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, ascending up Shark's Fin with certain cameras compared to what you were able to use with the bigger 4K, how different was this adventure compared to that as far as equipment? And then also, what we see in Meru with the weather, how different was it just personally, those two experiences? I mean, they must obviously be so different, but obviously they must be a little connection points to what you guys do and what you guys love to showcase and show to the audiences.
Yeah, well, Meru we shot, you know, two small cameras, one DSLR, a Canon 5D, and then another small kind of point-and-shoot video camera. And, you know, we never set out to make a feature documentary when we were shooting all that different footage. You know, we put it together afterwards and went back and shot interviews and really cobbled that together to what is now Meru. But, you know, this film, we had the opportunity to kind of really think about how we wanted to shoot it, what kind of film we wanted to make, what we wanted it to look like. We knew we wanted something that was going to play in theaters, so something very cinematic. We also knew that we wanted to shoot, you know, something beautiful and a cinema verite film, you know, where we really to go along on the ride kind of, you know, in real time almost. So, yeah, we shot a variety of cameras. I mean, we shot a lot with the Canon C300. We shot, you know, cinema cameras, cinema lenses, and really put a big effort towards the craft of the film. I thought that we wanted to kind of raise the production value and how, you know, what we brought to the table so that it could do justice to what Alex brought to the table. And, you know, that made it a lot more challenging. Obviously, in Yosemite, you're not dealing with as much of the altitude and the sub-zero temperatures. But, you know, we really tried to push the shooting and the cinematography and really also the verite shooting. I mean, we put a lot of time into capturing those very real moments because that's what we aspire to.
How different was the editing process? You guys obviously work with Bob Eisenhardt, who's done so much work in all around the world. I mean, one of my favorite docs is his stuff on Jerusalem, but obviously what he's done with you guys.
So, where did you see it? It's so hard to see.
Well, I'm Israeli, so I was able to actually see it out there. So I've got to ask. I've got to ask. What's it like working with him? And as far as having, like you said, Jimmy, about, you know, you guys had to reshoot a lot more and kind of change the perspective of the last film compared to this one, which you obviously had a lot more thought going into it. How did the edit change? How did your post change for these films?
Well, we had a lot more footage for this film because we had the luxury of shooting a lot more footage. And the real luxury with Free Solo was we had the resources to edit at the same time that we're shooting, which really refined our shooting and facilitated it. Like, you know, let's say El Cap is so large, but we understood the story points of the climb that were critical, right? Like the free blast and the boulder problem. And we knew we needed that for the story. And also just the things that look amazing, right? So it would only be good for the movie. So we could focus what resources we had on capturing those moments. So that was special and great. But, you know, Bob's amazing. We love Bob. He's like the godfather of both, to our two children, essentially. Like, you know, and I think he's got a real, he is so genuinely curious about what you, like, your ideas, that it makes it kind of refreshing the amount of ideas you can get in at it. Because there's no friction in the, like, you know, if someone has an idea, we try the idea. And, like, it can get kind of rot, you know, everyone gets kind of attached to their stuff, but with Bob, it's never the case. And with two people kind of as, like, I don't know, fiery as Jimmy and myself, like, Bob is a really great counterpart to that. But, you know, the two of them are so different. You know, Meru, those guys shot it themselves and set themselves hanging off the wall, and, like, every frame that they have, they shot it in the movie. Whereas, you know, Morocco is 7 minutes of Free Solo. It was 21 days of shooting. So there was this refinement that happened with Free Solo and this attention to, like, we kept on coming back to our edit, pushing it. And that was, I don't know, fulfilling. And the way we had more control on Free Solo.
You brought up the boulder problem. We amazingly get to see his reaction when he finishes that kick and he lands it, thank God. What was that feeling for you guys when it was happening? And then obviously when you guys see it footage-wise, that must have been surreal to see him. A, we didn't know what he was going to do, if he was going to do the jump or the kick, but what did that mean to you guys to see him accomplish that and him, I mean, the emotional release he had right then, I thought was amazing to see on screen.
Well, so Jimmy and the guys were dangling off the mountain, so they couldn't see him, right? So they were all in their own positions, moving with him up the mountain. So, you know, like they couldn't see the boulder problem, but through the valley floor and the long lens, you could. And it was terrifying. And we always knew that he was going to do the karate kick because that's what he practiced, what he decided to do. Like the point was like to have as little uncertainty as possible. But, you know, after he does that karate kick, it becomes beautiful. Like, you know that Alex is strong and having the best day of his life. And there was just this real beauty to the execution and the, like, human achievement that became vivid in that moment. Yeah, I mean, it was like, we cannot possibly express how scary it was on that day.
You know, in the second half of the film, we find out that someone that y'all know pretty well and Alex knew pretty well, Steck, died in going up Everest. And that was pretty close to when Alex decided to do the free solo. How did that impact the emotions on set? Did it make you guys step a little bit back? I know you guys were very reserved around Alex, but did that heighten anything? I mean, did that cause any other concern just about his emotional, you know, restraint? I mean, obviously he's such a Jedi figure, but like that must have scared you to some extent.
You know, his reaction was fairly reserved. I think, you know, and I kind of speak for myself as well, but, you know, when you live your life in the world that we live in, it's, you know, ever present. Death is ever present, and you know, we've both lost quite a few friends, and it's, you know, just part of what we do. I think it gives us a particular perspective on life. I mean, I think one of the reasons why we do what we do is we feel like there is a sense of urgency, that time is our only currency, and that, you know, we understand the risks, and yet we choose to do it anyways because we live with intention, and we ask ourselves the hard questions, and, you know, we answer those questions, and, you know, it's very reflective, you know, and we do what we do, you know, with a clear mindset. So I think that, you know, Alex is pretty reserved about it, but, you know, I think he's also very accepting about, you know, the consequences and the risks. In terms of on set, I mean, I think we were all, you know, I was very, you know, I was good friends with Louis as well. And, you know, it happens, and we all are aware of that. And a lot of the guys in the production are also, you know, serious expedition climbers, have been through a lot as well. And, you know, so I don't know that it really changed anything about how we moved forward.
But it was heavy.
It was heavy.
And I think we suspected that, like, as we discussed in the film, that, like, you know, it wasn't lost that Alex would happen, but he probably was not in a place where he could fully digest it.
How different is Alex now today compared to, you know, when you guys met him, you know, a decade ago? I mean, he seems to have changed just in watching him in interviews, even.
I think he changed very much over the course of the film, but that's because of time. You know, she is very special, and she is emotionally intelligent and articulates those feelings, and has enough self-confidence that she can stand up for herself at the same time as loving him for who he is. And I think that there's this weird thing that happened where, like, she accepted him for who he is, and us, like, the film crew accepted him for who he is, and it was, like, this, it was an emotional moment for Alex that he, like, evolved. But I think Jimmy can speak much better to what Alex was like 10 years ago and just how far he has come.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the version that you see of Alex on screen is the version 7.8. You know, I mean, he has come quite a long ways in terms of how he communicates. You know, I think when we first met, you know, people were often kind of taken aback because Alex is so true to himself, and there's no filter between what happens in his head and what comes out of his mouth sometimes, and but he's honest, you know, and you can't really blame someone for that. But we have worked on tactfulness a little bit. But he's the same, you know. On a lot, I mean, in every other way, he's the same. He's true to himself. He analyzes things very carefully. He's very thoughtful in terms of what he does and why he does it. You know, he's vegetarian because he wants to minimize his impact on the environment. He doesn't expect anybody else to do it, but he's going to do it. You know, and he thinks, you know, I have more money than I need because I'm already very happy living in a van and going climbing, so I'm going to take a third of my income and I'm going to try to make the world better because that's the right thing to do. And that's not to try to impress anybody, or, you know, it's purely because he actually thinks that's the case. And there are other people who aren't as fortunate as him, and he wants to help them. But he's not doing it because he's trying to impress anybody or because he feels obligated to some other, you know, person. It's just who he is.
I'm curious, do you guys take any memorabilia or little things from each film that you get to keep? Like, did you ask Alex for, like, that red shirt, or did you take, like, a rock from Shark's Fin?
He's still wearing
it. Are you serious?
That pair of pants that he climbed in might have been retired, but that pair of pants, he did the Fitz Traverse in with Tommy Caldwell a few years ago. That was, like, a legendary climb. And he climbed in a pair of shorts that had a huge hole in them because, you know, he could name off these huge, you know, routes that he'd done in them over, like, 5 years. He got them sewn because he doesn't want to be wasteful. And, you know, I mean, he's the real deal. and he's not even trying. He just is who he is.
And so, I've got to ask the last question. Did you guys ever figure out who the hell the unicorn guy was?
No, but thank God for the unicorn. So, Werner Herzog watched the movie Telluride, and the girl, like, what does Werner think? What does Werner think? It's, like, amazing that he watches your movie. And a member of our team encountered him in Toronto, and they go, like, so what do you think? And he's like, I really enjoyed the film. And they're like, what's your favorite part? And he's like, the unicorn. You believe it about, like, the vagaries of life, like, the uncertainty, those spontaneous moments. Like, the unicorn is amazing, and also on those literary levels, right? Like, Alex is a unicorn. What he's trying to do is a unicorn. And then there's a unicorn.
Well, guys, thank you so much for making this movie. I hope that you guys get a lot more awards for this film. I think the last ones you guys have made deserved so much more, so I hope this one tears it up at the Oscar season and award season.
That means so much to us. Thank you.
Thank
love
you.
The group, so thank you.
Yes, thank you.
That just kind of made me tear up, so thank you.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye.